We have the whole day today, right? No classes. No homework. Don't have the whole day today. Saturdays are nice. Okay. What did we talk about yesterday morning? The review session. I know one person that knows. He's ready to raise his hand right now. Okay. Very good. Yeah.
Varnashrama dharma, people follow Vedic code, but their motivation may be just to become pure or go to heaven dependent.
Or just to get something.
Material desire.
Yeah, material desire.
Daily Varnashrama system, they follow Vedic course, but with the explicit desire to please Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yeah. Yeah, very good.
For our times, how to please Supreme Personality of Godhead, one of the ways is to give up false conception, a bodily conception, and second is to cooperate among devotees.
Hey, music. Go ahead.
You talked about transcendental dharma and material dharma. You know, yes. That I myself, Indra, and other people, they are in the mode of goodness. They cannot understand the transcendental dharma.
Yeah. Sometimes he indicates disqualifications from understanding the personality of Godhead, who is the goal of transcendental dharma. So what is the disqualification? Contact with the modes of nature, even the mode of goodness. And we spoke about, try to find somebody in the mode of goodness. And if you find someone that even comes close to the mode of goodness, how much they're appreciated in society. But Yamaraj is indicating it's not sufficient. Even great sages who apply their maximum capacity to deeply ponder and understand the Supreme, they fall short. So what to speak of ordinary people? Cannot understand. Anything else? Yes.
He was desiring to be at the best of lotus feet of the Narada.
Yeah. That was Yamaraj's aspiration. Yamaraj's aspiration?
First of all.
Go ahead.
How he aspired that and I should leave his body now and I should be at the best of lotus feet of the Narada.
This is Vritrasura's aspiration. Okay. So how does that fit in with this? Okay. We discussed that yesterday. Maybe before yesterday. That's in the evening. Yeah. Go ahead.
After that, he explained that how to get the transcendental knowledge.
Wow, you said that verse so fast. Say it a little slower. And how to get it? Okay. Okay. What else did we cover?
You talked a lot of protection of the Lord. One shouldn't be anxious to know the plan of the Lord if one is following the Lord with faith. But regardless of how the Lord directs us, we should just follow with faith. And that is a protection. There will be protection in that.
We spent a lot of time on that one, didn't we? Does that stir any other thoughts about this topic of protection and having faith in the Lord's protection? That faith will be tested. It will be tested. It's regularly tested and sometimes very, very intensely tested. Where does our faith lie? Because it comes, this principle, which is where we ended up our discussion, now becomes amplified in this next discussion. No. Okay. In this upcoming discussion, there are two memorizable verses. Maybe one of them you already know. Maybe many of you already know. Do you remember from yesterday the example of the limbs of the body are not able to see the eyes? What was that example? Who can remember that one? Yeah.
Eyes can see the limb, but the limb cannot see the eyes. Similarly, we cannot see the Lord, but the Lord can see.
Yeah. And he is the seer, and through his seeing, we can see. Shastra Chakshusha, or Jnana Chakshusha, or seeing through that which the Lord speaks. Thereby we can see. And he's not discernible otherwise. How he sees and who he is. The seer, the supreme, who is the seer of all things, is not discernible otherwise. No matter what material qualification one has. Wealth, knowledge, beauty, renunciation. Cannot be seen otherwise. And that's part of the disqualification factor of those who are in touch with the modes of nature, and that's part of the theme of what Yamaraj is speaking. Is he's addressing the consternation of and frustration of the Yamadutas. What happened? What's going on? Hey, what's the deal here? We've never been stopped because they were applying principles of Dharma that are in touch with the modes of nature. So Yamaraj, being one of the Mahajans, he's now explaining to his dear Yamadutas the higher principles. He's explaining what we're hearing today is Bhagavad Dharma. This is Srimad Bhagavatam in a nutshell. Yamaraj giving the essence of the Bhagavatam class. Okay. And we're starting with text 19. Here's the phrase, text 19. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Hey, we've all heard that one. Right here. Yamaraj speaking it. What is the meaning? The principles of Dharma are directly sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Not somebody else. But Bhagavan himself is directly establishing Dharma. Now you put that statement together with the previous thing. who cannot understand Bhagavan? You follow the regular principles, or the principles of Dharma that the Yamadutas were speaking about, those that regulate the modes of nature, you will not understand Bhagavan, and you will not understand Dharma, my dear Yamadutas. So since they've not understood Bhagavan, thinking that Yamaraj, he is supreme, like many persons think a powerful person or a deva, maybe a film star, they're Bhagavan. And they worship such persons. I don't know how it goes in India, but it's just practically a standard procedure now in America. On India Independence Day, there's parades in different big cities. They know how to get people to come to the parade. They invite a film star. And if they don't invite a film star, very poor attendance. And they invite a film star, huge attendance. Hundreds of thousands of people flock to the event. And the film star gets on stage and waves and smiles, and I don't know what they do. And people go home. Puja. It's very sad. Anyway, such persons are not eligible to understand Dharma. Here's the translation. Real religious principles are enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although fully situated in the mode of goodness, even the great rishis, who occupy the topmost planets, cannot ascertain the real religious principles, nor can the demigods or the leaders of Siddha Loka, to say nothing of the asuras, ordinary human beings, vidyadharas and charanas. He doesn't say this, but I want to speak of my dear Yamadutas. And then in the purport, it's very, very nice. This time wound up over this section today. It's a very, very, very nice section. When we covered the reply that the Yamadutas gave to the Vishnudutas, their question was, what is Dharma? What is Adharma? What's the means of determining? What's the means of punishing? Are all fruitive workers punishable, or only some? Their first answer was, the codes of religion found within the Vedas, that's Dharma, and outside of that is Adharma. So we're now getting a lesson this morning from Yamaraj in Paradharma. Savai Pungso Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Hoksajay, or Dharmic Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam. We're getting, so that statement in the beginning, first chapter, first canto, second chapter, first canto, now it's being expanded by one great Mahajan, Yamaraj. The Paradharma is definitely the conclusion and superior, transcendental to the other statements of the Vedas. I'm just going to read what Prabhupada wrote. So nice. When challenged by the Vishnudutas to describe the principles of religion, the Yamadutas said, Veda pranihito dharma. The religious principles are the principles enacted by the Vedic literature. And we all went along with that understanding. Very good. They get an A. Now listen, it's at least a B minus. They did not know, however, that the Vedic literature contains ritualistic ceremonies that are not transcendental, but are meant to keep peace and order among materialistic persons in the material world. Peace and order, meaning they can be elevated to the quality of goodness, because otherwise they can't be peaceful or orderly, because they'll be passionate and arrogant and ignorant and angry. Peaceful and orderly. To elevate them. Now, that's another way of saying, bring them to the quality of goodness, but still within the modes of nature. Real religious principles are nishtraigunya. What's that verse in Bhagavad Gita? Nishtraigunya. Nishtraigunya. That's it. That's it. And the meaning? Vedas deal mainly with? Three modes of nature. The Vedas deal mainly with this Kaitava Dharma. The Vedas, these religious principles that the Yamadutta said, this is Dharma, deals mainly with the three modes of material nature. Nishtraigunya. Of Arjuna. And now Yamaraj is explaining. Nishtraigunya principles. The Yamadutas did not know that these transcendental religious principles, Bhagavad Dharma, so Yamaraj is training them up. Bhagavad Dharma. And therefore, when prevented from arresting Ajamila, they were surprised. Materialistic persons who attach all their faith to the Vedic rituals are described in Bhagavad Gita 2.42. Veda Vadarata Partha Nanyad Astiti Vadinaha. Veda Vadarata. If I were to have counted the times I've heard Prabhupada speak that phrase, several hundred. He liked that one. It's Veda Vada, those that are exponents of the Vedas, that are mistaken in what the purpose of the Vedas are. He explains, Veda ishta sayarvayar aham eva vedyo. Although it's there, it's plain, it's explicit, most people don't know. How does he say it here? Even though one follows Vedic scriptures, one may not know this transcendental principle. That's gentle. Even one may follow the Vedic principles, generally people don't know. What is the purpose? What do they think the purpose is? The ritual itself. And as you presented in the summary from yesterday, either opulent life now, and or I may contain my opulent life now so I get even more later on. Just put it in the punya account. Don't spend it now. Go on a big vacation to Swarga later. Most people think that's it, and that there's nothing more. Krishna says it explicitly, 2.42 Bhagavad Gita. Nanyad astiti vadanaha. There is nothing more. I think I've narrated this story here, but I'll do it again for those of you that haven't heard. One American devotee, now initiated, his name was Todd, and I don't know what his initiated name is. Grihastha, working man in his like late 20s. You know, very, very sharp, very proper, very clean, very all-American looking, really sharp, bright young man. Took it upon himself to conduct some classes outside of his work situation. He gave some classes in the local university, Bridgeport, Connecticut, something, University of Bridgeport. He told me about the experience. First thing he did, he wrote on the board, Maha Mantra. And first thing he did in the class was he got everybody to chant the Maha Mantra, explaining what it was, and basic introduction to bhakti yoga and the practices of devotion following the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. And during the course of the class, there was one gentleman in a suit sitting in the back looking fried. Like, and it made Todd nervous. Because, the person was obviously unhappy. So, when the class was over, the gentleman just came right up to the desk where he was sitting and just stood there and looked at him, like, scowling and glaring. So Todd, he's a gentleman, he just said, how did you enjoy the presentation? He just looked at him, went to the board, put the diacritics under the words. Didn't say anything, he just said, I'm not really expert in Sanskrit, I just wrote it out, KRSNA without the diacritics under it. Said, and aside from that, how did you like the presentation? And the man said, the purpose of the Vedas is yajna. And Todd said, if I may ask, yajna means sacrifice. The man said, not unto whom? Sacrifice. Todd, just being very simple-minded and gentle-natured, said, when we make a sacrifice, just like I'm married and I work very hard, I'm making a sacrifice, but I'm doing that for my family. And I'm trying with all my heart to make that sacrifice for my family a sacrifice to God. Badyaji mam namaskuru. Yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, didasi, yad. Madarpanam. I'm trying to make this as an offering to the Supreme. Very stern. Simply sacrifice. Not unto whom. So, initially he was taken back, but then he realized this person has a certain formal education in what we just read about, Vedavadarata, and there's nothing else. The purpose of the Vedas is in elevation through the modes of nature in getting your reward for that particular procedure, the sacrifice involved, the Vedic rituals involved. Enjoyment and later heavenly planets. It turns out, Todd told me, that this gentleman was a student of Professor Stahl. And Professor Stahl is an individual who Prabhupada had an extended communication with by letter. And Prabhupada wanted very much that we understand the dialogue between Prabhupada and Professor Stahl. He published a separate booklet, mainly for the devotees to read, so that we would read it and understand the difference between what Yamaraj is explaining here to the Yamadutas, or what Prabhupada is articulating in the purport, and persons who actually are steadfastly trained in this principle. There is nothing more. However, we're being trained in Bhagavad Dharma, where that procedure of yajna and tapa and jnana and everything has another purpose. The purpose is to understand Vedaischa Sayar Vair Ahameva Vedyo. That's the purpose. The elevation through the modes of nature is to make us more qualified, to help us become additionally assisted to understand Krishna. That's the purpose. To understand Krishna. And how can you understand Krishna? Only through devotional service. What is that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Those of you whose eyes are drooping because we were up late last night. What's the verse from Bhagavad Gita? Krishna can only be understood through devotional service. Translation? Roughly. That's the essence. So Yamaraj is explaining Bhagavad Dharma, which is above Kaitava Dharma, or Dharma that simply keeps one on the Ferris wheel. Ferris wheel, you have that term here? The children's rides when they have festivals sometimes, affairs. You get in a chair and it goes up, 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 up. I don't know what you call that here, but it's Ferris wheel. In Ranchi, we went twice in two different classes. Some two different devotees made the same statement. How, and probably can echo through everyone here as well. It's really nice sometimes. I really get inspired and I apply myself very, very nicely in devotional service and feeling very, very joyful and happy, and something happens and it starts to kind of lose grip on things, and it takes a while before I even realize it happened, and I'm feeling morose and try to get a hold of myself and get some good association and get going again. And what is that? Very common in the nectar devotion. Prabhupada explains it. The approach of material consciousness is sankalpa vikalpa. I accept something, then after some time, that very same something that I accept because it seems attractive, I reject that something. It's the mind. It's approaching devotional service on the mental platform. Simply put, very straightforwardly put. Yes, 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 yes. And then coasting on the merit. I've been working very hard. I think I deserve a vacation. I've been surrendering and surrendering. I need to relax. Remember in hearing a lecture in New York, Prabhupada said, if we adopt that mentality, it's not that we have to go lie down somewhere and say, okay, Maya, I have some time for you now. No, immediately. As soon as that mentality of slackening enters, immediately Maya is in front of you, engaging you in her service. Immediately. He gave the example, just like if you are looking at the sun and you turn your back to the sun, does it take some time for the shadow to come? No. Immediately. Turn your attention away from slacken in your approach to surrender to Krishna. Immediately. Some other engagement. And the other engagement is the downslope of the Ferris wheel. And there's a bigger loop that goes with ascending and attaining the heavenly planets, enjoying for some time, Kshine Punya Marcha Lokam Vishanti, coming again to this position, taking a deep breath, getting started again. And there's nothing more than that, some declare. And through those activities of yajna, those that are combining yajna with jnana think the purpose is, it's a bigger arc. The purpose is liberation, moksha. But they can't stay in that position of moksha either, because they have not taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Having not taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, they have to again come. Abhishuddha buddhaya yinyeravindakshu vimuktamaninas tavayastu bhavat abhishuddha buddhaya. So Yamaraj is trying to give Shuddha Buddhi to the Yamadutas by explaining these transcendental principles of Dharma. And the whole of the Bhagavatam is trying to give us that understanding as well. So, two concluding points. How can we practically apply all of this for ourselves? We can analyze where does our faith lie? And what do we have? Do we really have faith that there is such a realm where there's no modes of material nature? Because all we have experience of is the modes of nature. Is there really such a realm, and is it attainable? Is it our faith like that? Or we can also assess, what is it that we want? What is our aspiration? What's motivating, propelling us forward? Is it just relief from distress and feeling good about ourselves and comfortable, and that's the attainment we want? As long as we're there and not on the downslope of the Ferris wheel. Because if that's our aspiration, we're on the Ferris wheel, because we will not reach such a position where there's no downslope. As long as one is thinking like that, as one is not thinking, let me take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and be fixed in these transcendental principles steadfastly all the time. Not just on the upslope time. All the time. All the time. Constantly endeavoring. When we're in that position, Krishna would give us the transcendental vision of Him, transcendental understanding of how to attain Him. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Satatam kirtayantamam yatantascha dridhavarta. So the next very important and repeated theme in the Bhagavatam is, how do we get there? Well, it sounds like the right decision to make. Ferris wheel or transcendence? How do I get the transcendence part? The theme in the Bhagavatam, and stated the next verse and by Yamaraj, is one gets there by the association of one who's there. You need the guidance and you need the descending mercy of the Supreme Lord to bring you to His lotus feet. You'll find it everywhere. There's no surprise. It's not sometimes. It's always. It's a principle. Krishna gives access to his lotus feet very generously through his devotees, to those who are at his lotus feet. Because when you go to Krishna's lotus feet, you will find many, many, many unlimited numbers of transcendental souls. There's no shortage. So for Krishna to send one transcendental soul to rescue someone who's in the Ferris wheel position, someone, no, I don't want your association, I just want the lotus feet position. No deal. It's not Krishna's arrangement. It doesn't even make sense. Why would Krishna want that? Why would Krishna's associates want that? And why would one want? One doesn't want that. One wants to still be the king of the mountain, the top of the Ferris wheel, the top of the heap, still carrying material consciousness. Compete, dominate, and be on top. Material consciousness has nothing to do with spiritual consciousness. That the understanding, just say it one more time, the understanding of this Bhagavad Dharma principle, the transcendental religious principle, is inaccessible unless one adopts this method. Approaching those who are dear to the Lord at his lotus feet, gladly, they'll give it to you, 10 hands at once. Try to attain it some other way. You're on the Ferris wheel and feeling frustrated, suffering. And we all know that feeling. And still, like donkeys, we keep going forward, trying and trying again. That will be interrupted if and when we come to the position of hearing this message that Yamaraj is now speaking. That same message that everyone speaks. Prahlad Maharaj speaks. Everybody speaks. So, text 20, chapter 3, one of the memorizable verses, very famous verses, where the 12 Mahajans are spoken by Yamaraj, starting with Svayambhu. How many know the verse? Svayambhu, Narada, Shambhu. Sadhachar, you must know.
I don't remember.
Okay. No? Oh. You should learn this verse. Standard verse. Svayambhu Narada Shambhu Komara Kapilovanu Prahlada Janako Bhishmo Balir Vyasikir Vayam. These are the 12 Mahajans spoken by the last one, Yamaraj himself. Svayambhu. Who's that? Svayambhu. Who is Svayambhu? Think of what the meaning of the word is. Svayambhu. Self-born. Who is self-born? Brahma. Svayambhu. Narada. Shambhu. Vachiva. Komara. Kapilo. Manu. This is specifically, well, it's any of the Manus, but it's Svayambhuva Manu is being referred to here. Prahlada Janaka, Bhishmo, Balir, Bali Maharaj, Vyasakir, Vyasaki. Vyasaki is Shukadeva Goswami and Yamaraj. These are the 12 Mahajans. The same 12 Mahajans, we went over this, but the statement made by Yudhisthira Maharaj to the Yaksha indicating Mahajano Yena Kata Sapanta. How to understand the principles of Dharma? Yamaraj is saying, even for those most qualified rishis, sages, in the mode of goodness, can't understand. They can't understand the Lord. They can't understand this principle. What to speak of ordinary people? So if it's so, Prabhupada expresses this in the purport, if it's so restricted, what's the use of that principle? Well, the answer he gives is it is accessible through disciplic succession. Where are we going to find one of those 12 Mahajans? If that's the only way, Brahma, Narada, Lord Shiva, Kumaras, Lord Kapila, Swayambhuva Manu, we're halfway disqualified. We can't approach any of those people. And same the other, Yamaraj, Bali Maharaj. So they're representatives. Through approaching the representative, it's if that representative is properly representing in disciplic succession, it's as good. Just like if you take a hold of electric wire that's plugged into the electric socket, and the electricity is on, the circuit breaker, everything is working. You're touching the end of the electric wire is as good as touching the electric, putting your fingers in the socket. Although it's some distance from that powerhouse, but you're getting the power from the powerhouse just by. So as long as everything is connected, as long as the disciplic succession is not broken, it's the same. It is the same. Not only like the same, it is the same. Prabhupada would like to speak on this point. He would sometimes say, people give the argument, oh, woe is me. Arjuna was very fortunate. He had the opportunity to hear directly from Krishna, but I will never have the opportunity to hear directly from Krishna. So I'll never be able to understand Bhagavad Gita. Woe is me. Not so. Because if one hears in disciplic succession, it's as good as hearing from Krishna. I personally experienced Prabhupada speaking on this point and entering a state of samadhi. He lost external consciousness when describing this principle. He was saying, when Krishna says, surrender unto me, and the spiritual master says, surrender unto Krishna, their speaking is the same. He didn't say it's kind of like the same. It is the same. And he repeated it 3 times. And he lost external consciousness. He was trying to teach us this same lesson. And it was such an intense contemplation on this. He just got absorbed and lost contact with us for about 2 minutes. It was a very intense experience. In Mayapur with a couple thousand devotees, a few thousand devotees packed in the temple room, Prabhupada speaking on this point. His eyes closed, all the muscles of his body just, like his face, just, the face became elongated, and his body was tottering like this. He was still in an upright position, but it wasn't, his vital force was somewhere else besides with us. And I can guess where it was. Even when he was giving external consciousness, his vital force is with Krishna. But he just completely withdrew, or involuntarily it happened, or however it happened. And the devotees didn't know what to do, were being entertained. And all of a sudden the tube went off. So one devotee picked up a mridanga and started chanting very softly, Hare Krishna. And after about 4 or 5 minutes of that, Prabhupada again opened his eyes, looked around the room, stood up and left the Vyasa-san and went to his room. This point that we're hearing right now, same point, spoken by Yamaraj and explained by Prabhupada in the purport. You can access that direct, face-to-face contact with the Personality of Godhead and understand this principle, which otherwise they're, even the most qualified people cannot understand unless they receive it in this method. And it's direct. And this transcendental principle, Bhagavad Dharma principle, will be understood. And if you can understand this Bhagavad Dharma principle, then when you go further in the Bhagavatam and read descriptions of Krishna's activities, there's no question, because that Bhagavad Dharma principle is in place, there's no question of misconstruing Krishna's pastimes, or rendering them, or interpreting them, or guessing about them, or doubting them, or whatever. It's a display of the internal potency and what is connected to that display of the internal potency through sound vibration. Very wonderful what Yamaraj is doing here. In the purport, Prabhupada quotes from Padma Purana, where he takes it now, goes the other direction and says, if one, in Padma Purana it is stated that if one does not receive one's mantra through disciplic succession, it has no efficacy. It's like electric wire, it's not connected to the electric outlet. And you hold on to it or connect it to some appliance. The appliance will not work. There will be no electricity in that wire. Although it is a conductor, if it's not connected, or if the line is broken somewhere. If the mantra is received because somebody read it in a book, or even somebody speaks it who is not in disciplic succession, in either case, no efficacy. No efficacy. But if one receives from a devotee, just like chant Hare Krishna, efficacy. Now, that there's Namabhas, and we'll get into this. He does discuss that here also. And this, in that same reference, it's quoted in Hari Bhakti Vilas as well. If one is in that situation, what to do? When I was young, I received some mantra from our Kula Guru. And now I'm in contact with disciplic succession. What should I do? One should receive mantra again. Or actually for the first time. Stated directly in scripture. That is to say, one should be connected to a disciplic succession. And part of that connection in the formal procedure is the ceremony by which one receives mantra. Okay. Then, the next verse is also a very, very nice verse. Text 22. Etavan eva lokesmin pumsa dharma parasmritaha bhakti yoga bhagavati tannama grahanadivihi. Especially the last line Prabhupada quoted a lot. Tannama. Grahanadibihi. Devotional translation, devotional service, beginning with chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. Very succinct. I'll read it again. Devotional service, beginning with the chanting of the holy name, is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. This is Paradharma. This is what the introduction of Bhagavad Gita was proclaiming. This is going to be our subject. Here it is. In the context of a story within a story within a story. The story of Yamaraj speaking to the Yamadutas after the Yamadutas were told to go away by the Vishnudutas, after Ajamila chanted Namabhas, after he did so many sinful activities, which is being narrated by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit to explain this very same principle. Yamaraj is stating the principle again. This is Paradharma. This is transcendental Dharma. Devotional service beginning with chanting. Or hearing and chanting. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Same thing. The way that he's saying it is different, but it's the same thing that Prahlad speaks. Same thing that any one of the Mahajans is going to speak. Because they know Paradharma. Somebody approaches them, they're going to teach Paradharma. In the purport, Prabhupada explains, through the application of this principle of Paradharma, gradually, the awakening of that transcendental consciousness of the living entity through careful cultivation will manifest. And it manifests in ecstatic chanting and dancing, much like we find in the description of the activities of Lord Chaitanya with his associates. It's like astounding. The activities of Lord Chaitanya and his associates in their chanting and dancing. They were just like madmen. They weren't pretending, or they were just in such an enlivened state, inconceivably enlivened transcendental state, through the very same accessing that consciousness to the very same activities that we do at this stage in a regulative fashion. Through Paradharma, to directly contact. We have no qualification to do that. We have lots of disqualification that should bar us. As far as the other religious principles, Dharma principles that the Yamadutas are speaking about, we're ineligible to come before the Lord. But through the Bhagavad Dharma principles, whatever ineligibility we have is pushed to the side by just this ocean of mercy, and we're brought in direct contact. What's the access to that such mercy? Those that are bearers of that mercy, the representatives of the Lord. How important are they? And the process that they're giving. If we can get a little glimpse of this one, we'll be so much happier. So much more fixed in Krishna consciousness. But the Ferris wheel program. Yes, 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 yes. Business as usual, back down again. Therefore, we should fix ourselves very carefully in the shelter of those who are mercifully distributing this Bhagavad Dharma process. And take the activities, although they're at this stage they're regulative, take them very seriously. Apply them very carefully, intently, conscientiously, with real feeling. Try to cultivate in the association of others that are trying to cultivate. Very ecstatic. So I was going to go further, but the clock isn't standing still. It keeps moving. So tomorrow morning, very, very elaborate discussion about the theology of the Holy Name. Yamaraj is going to dive more deeply into the subject. Just what are the glories of the Holy Name? How does it work? In the purport, Prabhupada quotes lengthy quotes from other acharyas, from other scriptures, reaffirming the same statements that are being made here by Yamaraj, the glories of the Holy Name, as a way of bringing us to the threshold of genuine devotional service, where one is enriched with the same thing that people ask all the time about: when will I get that genuine feeling of devotion? Not just mechanically do, but genuine feelings of devotion. Nice section. Okay. So, any discussion? Yeah.
The tennis wheel example, you know.
Yeah.
I got a doubt saying that yesterday we said that we cannot discern how the Supreme Lord functions. And it's not required also to discern because we cannot understand that. So, having eyes are looking at the things, and things cannot understand the eyes. So, even at my stage of practice, sadhana, I cannot do that with any part. So, in that context, coming here saying that, you're saying that so the sankalpa vikalpa process is going on in this one, the celestial sort of thing. Taking shelter in the Supreme Lord in the, what you call, the solution, what you are saying.
Yes.
So in that context, so when I cannot understand or discern the how the thing is functioning, then how I should function so that I can get out of the sankalpa vikalpa sort of thing and go forward?
The answer is I spoke it. I'll read it.
Sorry,
I'll repeat it. No problem. No problem. I'll amplify your statement, and then here's the punchline comes at the end. Even though one follows Vedic scriptures, one may not know this transcendental principle, for it is not known to everyone, to say nothing of human beings. Even the demigods in the upper planetary systems are unaware of it. The transcendental religious principle must be understood from the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly, or from his special representative. Again and again and again, I said. Again and again. It's the same principle that's reiterated. It's not, and I said it earlier, but in other classes, but I'll repeat it again. It's not an intellectual event. Oh, now I understand it. As one devotee told me, Maharaj, I think I've intellectually accepted Krishna consciousness. I've got it down. Arise early. Mangal Arati, on time every morning. You know who I'm speaking. And you know, associating with devotees, and class, and Vaishnava etiquette, and something's missing. I think it's that I've accepted Krishna consciousness intellectually. And what about the feeling side? Submission. All of that is wonderful. But it's not the entire message. It's not sufficient. With feeling, one should submit. And Krishna's indication is, yes, submit to him, sarva dharmam pradyaja mam ekam sharanam braja. How do I do that? His representative? Like the question yesterday, if I do something that's pleasing for my spiritual authority, can I understand that Krishna is pleased by that? Yes. More pleased by that than if you went out of your way to do something just to please him. I just lost you? More pleasing to him. It's more pleasing to Krishna if you approach one who is at Krishna's feet and very feelingly submit to that devotee in a very humble mood and serve that devotee with great love. That's more pleasing to Krishna. Then you come before Krishna and repeat the same. More pleasing to Krishna. Far more, millions of times more pleasing to Krishna. And when Krishna becomes pleased, what happens? We become completely pleased. We become satisfied, pacified, happy, able to make others happy just by our existence. We were speaking the other day about cooperation. So there's that person who's at Krishna's lotus feet, trying to help someone come to Krishna's lotus feet. We approach that someone who's trying to come to Krishna's lotus feet and in a very humble mood place ourselves before them and try to serve them. That will please that person even more than trying to please the person who's at Krishna's lotus feet. And that's our teaching. And one can try to intellectually accept it. And that's not sufficient. It's from our heart. So, Shrinvanti, Kayanti, Grinanti, Sadavaha. Tadvag Vasargo Janata Agha Viplavo. Make a revolution by hearing this message. And it's not in the marketplace. It's not in the newspapers, it's from devotees only, not from the university. They're not going to teach these things at any institute, any university, college, anything. Yeah, this question came up in Ranchi also. It's the answer to your question is to the degree, it's one of these not on off, but what's the word? There's a rocker arm switch and there's a variable switch. What do they call those? That's for temperature, but not thermostat, that's for temperature. There's some variable to degrees. There's some dimmer switch, there we go. To the degree that one is submitting one's, to the degree that your consciousness is free from bodily conception, and submitting yourself for the pleasure of the Lord and His devotees. to that degree it's spiritual. And conversely, it's to that degree it's material. So there's a mix. Just like we've been speaking about Namabhas and Abhas Rupa Bhakti. So the light that comes before the direct light of the sun, or dawn, is that real light? It's light. It's Abhas light. It's indirect light. It's light, but it's indirect light. It's not direct light. That happiness that we feel, it's giving us an indication that Krishna is coming. And that's happiness. But it's not the same happiness as Shuddha, where our consciousness is free from material conceptions of self and others, and the pleasure of the personality of Godhead is our all in all. In that humble state of mind, thinking simply of the happiness of Krishna and his devotees, that's Shuddha. And that spiritual happiness, your question is that spiritual? That spiritual happiness is not static. It's ever expanding, ecstatic. It knows no limit. And so conversely, again, the happiness that we experience in the Abhas Bhakti stage definitely has limit. It's certainly much greater, and the feeling of it is more internal, or it's more genuine, or of a spiritual feeling than the happiness of sense gratification or selfish minded conduct. Tomorrow, I was thinking to discuss it this morning, but the time doesn't permit. But the glory of this Abhas Bhakti is what is going to be spoken about tomorrow, exactly on your question. And it does eradicate reactions to sins, even unknowingly, incompletely. It's sufficient. So it's spiritual, but Abhas spiritual. Okay. Yeah.
Kumar, these Vedavadaratas, although they speak of yajnas and so on, sometimes they do very abominable things.
Hmm.
Is it always like that, or is it only because of Kali Yuga influence?
Well, we read in the Bhagavatam about
Dakshans,
all kinds of people doing, wow, man-woman things and killing things and, you know, abominable things.
So it doesn't actually, it's also sort of intellectual acceptance, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much so. With lots of holes. Holes in their intellect, so it's not even wholly intellectually accepted. But there's great faith in certain principles. And strength comes from faith in those principles, although the purpose behind the faith is attaining something material. And therefore it's definitely intellectual only. It's not connecting to the personality of Godhead with submission and devotion. Therefore, the submission and devotion, that's the key. That's the variable factor, the dimmer switch factor, are submission and devotion. And devotion means devoid of bodily conception, devoid of material conception of us and those things, those entities that are spiritual. The deity, the spiritual master, the scripture, the name, the devotees, the devotion within those devotees. Devoid of those material conceptions of things that are spiritual allows for us to be spiritual and not just intellectual or mental in our acceptance. Then we can be fixed, and the Ferris wheel program is a thing of the past. When, oh when, will that day come? Yes. Here's the answer. We hold on. We're holding on. Despite, while everything that you said, I will accept, you have those understandings and realizations. While that is true, still holding on. There's a classic, I'll try to make it short because of time. There's a classic story. The student, the disciple that goes to the spiritual master and says, "My dear Guruji, why is it so difficult to give up sense gratification? Could you explain this to me?" Many of you have heard this example, but Guruji says, "This is a very deep question. I need to ponder it. Can you come back tomorrow? I will answer the question tomorrow." So the disciple is thinking, "Oh, this is wonderful. Guruji is going to answer this question that's burdening my heart." And shortly, he comes back the next day. And as he's approaching Guruji's residence, he lives off in the forest. So he's following the path and he hears a cry coming from a distance. "Help! Help!" Sounds like Guruji's voice. Runs and he sees his body is just strapped around a tree, and "What happened? What happened? Help!" So he starts pulling his arm and pulling his leg and pulling at his body and pulling and pulling and "Help!" Finally Guruji stands up and says, "Now do you understand?" Because we're holding on so tight. We're not forced. No one's making us hold on tight. We hold on tight. Therefore, it's difficult to give up. We could move on very easily. Let go. But if I let go, then I'll have nothing. Because it's like the inchworm example in the Bhagavatam. You've seen inchworms, right? Those worms that have, they're really long, and they've got legs in the back and legs in the front, and they, whoops. So their body goes around looking for the next place where they're going to go, and then once they land their front legs, then their body arches. Whoop. Then they join to the next place. They go from twig to twig or place to place by that. So we will not take shelter of something that's, at least at this point to us, unknown. We'll hold on to what we know, our conditioning, our habits and you know, our suffering business. We hold on to it. Because if I let go, what will I have? I'll be nowhere. Like Arjuna says, what happens if someone starts in this path and desists? Aren't they in no realm, like a riven cloud? They don't have something spiritual, they don't have something material, they're nowhere. Nowhere land. Krishna says, no. Whatever progress one has made, never lost. But if so, it's a question of faith. Then in at least in Christianity, it's a big issue, the term leap of faith. So but inchworms don't leap. They find that shelter and then they move and let go of the previous twig and go to the next one. So that medium is the representative of Krishna. And the instructions and the kind association, the loving association of that representative of Krishna. Krishna may be beyond our sight and something theoretical, very nice, and I can experience some kind of feeling, but not enough to let go of these painful things. But if I can establish a proper relationship with that representative Krishna, some trust in that relationship with that representative, I can move on from this one to that one. And then my whole existence can be in that realm. At least I can begin to experience that realm. And when we begin to experience something, we're a little awkward at it. When you first ride a bicycle or type on a keyboard or whatever other things that people drive a car or learn to cook in the kitchen or dress the deity or something you do initially, you're a little clumsy and awkward at it. But by becoming, especially with the care and loving attention of Krishna's representative, helping us to become acclimated to the spiritual atmosphere, it becomes very natural. It is very natural. This other is unnatural. Therefore, it's very, very, very beneficial to have such association. I was reading just this morning these letters that I wrote some time ago. I posted on the board that I don't know if anybody reads anymore. It's so valuable to have that association. As I've written, what can take place in your lives in however long you're here, 2-3 years, will likely be the most transformational, spiritualizing impact in your whole entire life. Such an opportunity. And it depends on how you avail yourself to that opportunity. But it can be that experience of something beyond that which we're holding on to allow us to, at least part of our baggage, let go of it. Part of our conditioned tendencies of doing things dumb. I mean, pull the donkey, carrying a big burden on her back and just chasing after a carrot that's hanging from a stick in front of us. And going through our whole life like that. One more step, one more step, one more step. For a whole life. People do it, all the time. You get an option. At least the opportunity to experience something other. Very, very great opportunity. So, that's the why, and then what to do. So much effort is being made to lay out very clearly the other option. make the invitation. Very inviting, very friendly, warm, loving. But one has to take that step. You can't take the step for another person. Krishna's representative cannot make that step for the other person because it's an act of free will. Krishna can't, Krishna's representative can't, no one can. It's the individual who has to make that step. It's Krishna's system. Free will. So what do we want? And so it's not just a matter of putting things on a scale and saying, well, the scale tips this way, I want. Like this earlier discussion, it's not just an intellectual event. I make a decision. That's all I have to do is just make a decision and sit back and wait for it to happen. It's not going to happen. Give your heart. Go there with your heart. In the beginning, that going there is certainly going to be conditional. It's not a free fall. Pew! It's done very carefully. It should be done very carefully. Very thoughtfully, blind following and blind rejection are both condemned in the scripture. Should not be done blindly. But this process is not putting blindfolds on people and pushing them. Very systematic knowledge is being presented. What is this and what is that? And experiencing this and experiencing that through the kind association of Krishna's loving representatives and the Sangha of the devotees. So this is incubator time. You can make very careful decisions and make little steps, deliberately made steps. Prabhupada once described making spiritual progress like going across ice. You probably don't have that experience here, but I have growing up in upstate New York, where in the wintertime the water freezes, the lake freezes. But you have to be very careful, especially in the beginning of the winter, because the ice is thin. So the way that you do it is, you put one foot, you slide one foot out, and put a little bit of weight, and you listen to hear if it cracks. If it cracks, you step back. Put a little bit of weight, doesn't crack. A little more weight, put all your weight, doesn't crack. Then slide the next. And after you find out by traversing a little space that it's solid now, you go here and go there and go here and go there. Skate around and sled around and carefree. Initially, it's done very cautiously. That's wise. It's a sign in Kapila Dev's teachings to Devahuti, when describing the appearance of the element of intelligence. Doubt, apprehension, and misapprehension are part of intelligence. And Prabhupada explains, doubt is appropriate when there isn't knowledge. But once there is knowledge, then properly apprehending will replace the doubt. I don't know what bhakti is, and I just with some intelligence, I'm cautious. I'm a little doubtful. Who knows what this is? It's another entity I've never come in contact with. Maybe it's this, and I don't. Maybe it's that, and I don't know. I'm cautious. But in the course of hearing from a proper source, the doubt is cleared. That's a sign of intelligence. I move forward. Move forward cautiously, but move forward. Sign of intelligence. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was 34 years old before he even had a Srimad Bhagavatam. When he read Srimad Bhagavatam, he was ecstatic. He read it again. Then he found out that there was an available copy with a little difficulty. He got a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Lord Chaitanya applied the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. He read it through completely. He was ecstatic. He read it through again. And his life changed miraculously, just like... He was a great intellectual. He had doubt, but once he had the genuine thing, he moved. He left behind the material ways and attractions and just the conditioning things. And went and went and went and kept going and kept going. Very quickly. Very powerful personality. We're not so powerful. We move according to our capacity, but move. But so, see, in addition to the realization, the recognition that you've expressed, seek the alternative, and the means for that alternative is spelled out. And it's available. Very fortunate. Sometimes it's spelled out, not available. Most of the times it's not spelled out, as Prabhupada is explaining here. Most people don't even know of this principle. What to speak of being able to offer it in disciplic succession. Great, 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 great treasure. Great treasure. Just like this wonderful picture of Krishna bringing fruits and the Mataji, or Krishna bringing grains to trade the grains for fruits. She loads his arms, although the grains all fall out of his fingers. We're like that. We're coming to Krishna with... What are we coming to Krishna with? Hoping for something, generally, something material. Krishna filled her basket with jewels. But Krishna can give far more than jewels. He can fill our hearts with genuine love and devotion. And what do we have to offer? When we can experience that reciprocation, letting go is very easy. So how do we get to that genuine reciprocation? Krishna provides his representatives. That's how he introduces us to that reciprocation. He wants us to go there first. Be humble first. Submit to those who are very dear to me. Come before me in a humble state of mind. Ready to offer all respects to others without any expectation of respect in return. In such a state of mind. Okay, it's after 8. I think we're going to end this morning. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.